most grateful to all of you for coming this evening, and especially for utilizing your God-given intelligence to understand the highest purpose of life. The world we live in is in a most unpredictable and dangerous condition. There is so much suffering, so much distrust, unhappiness everywhere. In nations such as India, we see so much poverty, so many incurable diseases growing. The person who is in charge, the director of health for Maharashtra, told me that thousands of people are contracting AIDS every day in the city of Bombay alone. Thousands. This is more or less documented evidence. There's no question. It is an epidemic that could destroy so many lives within this country. And recently you had earthquake here in Maharashtra, which killed so many thousands of people, 10,000 people within a matter of seconds. And there are floods and there are droughts, and the government is so unstable because of crooked politicians. And more or less the same situation is going on everywhere in the world. Why? It is all a reaction of materialistic, sinful activities. Because the temptations, the urges that are being created by the media, through television, through music, through entertainment, through literature, is so much perverting and disturbing people's consciousness. This is Kali Yuga, the age where ignorance becomes king. And to lead a good life and utilize this human form of birth for its proper purpose means to declare war against Maya. And whenever there is a war amongst nations in this world, who do they recruit to fight? It is the youth. In my country, America, when I was young, your age, there was a terrible war in Vietnam. And hundreds and thousands of my colleagues, people of my age, were killed. And millions were injured coming back just with injuries that ruined their whole life on a physical and mental level. And they had a draft where as soon as you reach 18 years old, you have to register for the draft. If you do not register for the draft, you are put in prison for 10, 15 years. It was the law. Law. Every man, when they're 18 years old, must register for the draft. And if you don't have a very, very good excuse, you are drafted and sent to Vietnam. 95% of the soldiers that were sent there did not volunteer. They were drafted. Either you go to Vietnam and get killed, possibly, or you get put in jail and never be able to get a job for the rest of your life. So this was the situation. And in other nations, they use the major portion of their budget of taxes to pay soldiers a good salary so that they will join the army and defend the country and fight for what they call freedom and justice. So Srila Prabhupada was the general of Krishna's army. And he wanted to recruit the youth, knowing that the youth are the people who actually have the energy and the strength and the eagerness to actually fight the battle against Maya. And here in India, generally, we find the people that follow religion are the very old people. who just burned out with everything else in life, and then they chant Hare Krishna, or they do some puja. When I came to India, I saw no youth enthusiastic for devotion to God. I only saw old people. And most of those old people were not following true spiritual paths. They were just following some tradition, some traditional puja or something like that. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was preaching during the time of World War II. And at that time, Subhash Chandra Bose, they just made a national holiday for him on January 23rd. Everything is closed to honor Subhash Chandra Bose. He was a freedom fighter. And how did he? He was such a dynamic personality that he was lecturing in such a way that he was getting tens and thousands of young people in India to join his army. And the purpose of the army was to ultimately overthrow not the Germans, but the British. And at the same time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, Subhash Chandra Bose was a classmate of our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was recruiting very, very intelligent young men in their early 20s to preach the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Subhash Chandra Bose was becoming very disturbed, and he directly approached Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, "We need these young, intelligent men to fight the war against Britain. But you're taking so many of them for your ashram, for your movement." So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, very boldly and in his own transcendental way, he said, "You need very physically strong, courageous people." He said, "You look at my men, they are very skinny and weak. They will not make good soldiers, so let them help me." So Subhash Chandra Bose could not argue with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he offered his respects and went back to the battlefields. And Srila Prabhupada, when he went to America, first he started in India, because he understood. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati met Srila Prabhupada in 1922, yes? In Ultananga Junction Road, on a rooftop in Calcutta, of what that was then the Bhakti Vinod Asana, which later became the Gaudiya Math. And Srila Prabhupada was young. He was only in his early 20s, recently married. And he was a Gandhian. In a non-violent way, he was fighting for freedom from the British rule. Subhash Chandra Bose and Gandhi had the same idea, but just different approaches. Gandhi felt, "Let us recruit the youth," because Gandhi's movement was mostly youth too. Now you see Gandhians with their little hats, and they're all in their 80s and 90s years old. But when they were with Gandhi, they were your age or younger. He attracted the youth, because in the youth is energy and power and people who have freedom. They are not so tied up in everything. They can actually do something for the world. He wanted to do it in a nonviolent way, through demonstrations and non-cooperation. And Subhash Chandra Bose took the youth, and he wanted to fight with the sword. So Srila Prabhupada was told by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada that, "You are a young man. You should take this message of Lord Chaitanya and spread it in the English language throughout the world." And Srila Prabhupada, he said to his Guru Maharaj, he said, "How can we preach? We're a dependent nation. We're third class. We're under the regime of the British. First we should get independence. Then the luxury of religious preaching we can start to speak about." And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explained very forcefully, no. He said, which particular party is in power? These things are always changing. Politics is temporary. Who is in rule? Who is being ruled? It is always changing in this world. But the eternal truth is that we are all subordinate to God. Sanatana Dharma, our eternal occupation of being servants of God, is the only freedom from the clutches of death. And he explained, this cannot wait, it must be done now. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was recruiting the youth of India to fight for truth, for the absolute truth. And Srila Prabhupada, he began preaching, but he saw that the youth of India in the early 1960s were so much contaminated and plagued by the desire for money and the desire for Western comforts and Western music and Western dress and all in all Western culture. How could we get them to fight for the truth of the Vedic conclusions? They don't even believe in it. So he went to the West, and it was the youth. It was the youth of the West, people in their early 20s and teens, who were frustrated with the facade of the illusion of material society, who could see that money can never bring happiness, that technology can never bring any solutions to this world. People who had it all, the hippie generation, were not from the poor class. The hippie generation in the 1960s were from the upper class of income families, from the very wealthy families, and millions of them were rejecting everything to look for something else besides the ridiculous, empty, dry, illusory conception of material life that America was presenting. And when they heard Srila Prabhupada's message, they understood this is the truth. We will give our lives for this truth. We will fight under the commandership of Srila Prabhupada against the ignorance of Maya. But it was Srila Prabhupada's great dream that the youth of India take the banner of truth, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, and apply it to their lives and spread it throughout India and throughout the world. And all of you are the fulfillment of Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta, Lord Chaitanya, and Krishna's dream. We have come to recruit you into the transcendental army to fight against the forces of ignorance, of lust, of envy, of anger, of pride, of greed, and of illusion. To fight against these tendencies with the supreme most of all weapons, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
and we have our bombs in the form of Srila Prabhupada's books. Very powerful time bombs. We plant them all over the world, knowing that someday they will explode and change people's lives. And the secret weapon of prasad. People just think they're getting nice food, but they're getting Krishna's mercy. And that will transform their hearts. So Prabhupada has given us an arsenal of various weapons to fight. And he has given us the determination and the integrity by which, fearlessly, we stick together. And we should know, on the battlefield, we need each other. Comradeship is very important on the battlefield. If you are fighting a war against a vast enemy, if you are all alone, there's very little you can do. But together we can do much. So the association of devotees is all important to follow the path of bhakti. And this is the ultimate greatest need in human society. And it is within your hands to take up this great mission and do something wonderful for the world. Today we even have a young British soldier. Prabhupada's movement is recruiting young people all over the world. No doubt, Krishna consciousness is for all people of all ages. It is the eternal constitutional position of the soul to serve Krishna, to glorify Krishna. But to actually change the world and change people's hearts, the youth have that dynamic energy and that freedom by which they could truly dedicate themselves. So I am very grateful and very enlivened to see all of you coming. First of all, try to understand what is Bhagavad Gita. What is the teachings of the Vedas? Once you understand it, you will be convinced. Unless we have an extremely crooked heart, we have to be convinced once opening our hearts and mind to understand this truth. That is called jnana. And when we live by those truths, that is vigyan. Then we get divine realizations. And to share those realizations with others is the greatest service to all of humanity. So please, it is my very humble and sincere appeal to all of you, really deeply try to understand the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya as Srila Prabhupada has taught. The original pure teachings of the Supreme Lord as revealed in the Vedas, which is the essence of the scriptures of all parts of the world. I was recently reading an article where the Bharatiya Bhavans journal, which is circulated throughout the world, one journalist from that magazine came to New Vrindavan, and he asked Srila Prabhupada a series of questions in 1976. He was asking about Hinduism. And Srila Prabhupada said that the Vedas do not teach Hinduism. It teaches Sanatan Dharma. The essence of Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Judaism, it is all Sanatan Dharma. There's one religion, and that is Sanatan Dharma. It has manifested itself in different places, in different times, through different teachers, in different languages, but the message is the same. And what is that? That we are not these material bodies. That we are the eternal soul. And satisfaction does not come by satisfying the mind and body. Satisfaction comes by nourishing the soul, the true self. And the nature of the soul is part of God. The eternal servant of God. And in different religions, God has many names. Allah, Yahweh, Ram, Krishna, Jehovah. And by surrendering to that God and serving that God through devotion, purifying our hearts through the chanting of the holy names, that is Sanatan Dharma. That is true religion. And that is what Bhagavad Gita teaches. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha isami masaja. Abandon all varieties of religion. Just surrender to me, Krishna says. I shall relieve you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. So it is this message that the world is in desperate need of. The process of how to surrender to Krishna. So try to understand this philosophy. Chant the holy names of the Lord. Associate with devotees. Make your life sublime. And help others to also become happy in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Is there any questions you would like to ask? I can try to answer.
it comes to the sacrifice, like if we have a certain thing, and if it is a person is our senior, then we'd like to give it to him. If he is our equal, then at that moment both of us require it. So generally the mind is saying that I require it more. Both of us are requiring it, I require it more. So if you take it, then sometimes later on we feel, oh, I should have given it to him, he's a devotee, I'm a servant, I should have given it to him. And otherwise, then I would suffer if I would give it to him. So at that time, what is good for us, and how should we, what consciousness should we be in that?
This is a very practical question, which requires a very practical answer. Krishna consciousness is very simple. There's no difficult explanation for any question if we are sincere. Whatever facilities you want to utilize, it is ultimately meant for the service of Krishna. And as our parampara has been created, we serve Krishna by following the instructions of senior Vaishnavas. So in such a situation, you simply ask senior Vaishnava, will this facility be better utilized in Krishna's service if he or she has it or if I have it? And if they say, if you have it, then you use it. And if they say it's he or she has it, then you don't be attached to it. Does that answer your question? You just, the idea is we have to, what is best for Krishna's service? Not how I can get the best score or how I can get the best credit, but how it will best be utilized for Krishna. And if you do not know, then you ask someone who has more advanced understanding of how it can be best for Krishna's service. And then you utilize it in that way. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yes? You can use blankets if you have permission, but you should not steal. And chapels, it is not nice to take someone else's chapels. You should use your own chapels. Because if you use somebody else's chapels, then when they come, they have no chapels. It's quite practical. And then you cause another devotee anxiety. And that is offensive to cause a devotee anxiety. So better to not take devotees' chapels. And if you need a blanket, you can use, but you should get permission. You should not take another devotee's property, because then it creates anxiety and even decrease of service of that devotee. I remember one devotee one time had a service he had to perform. And he ran out to get his shoes, but his shoes he couldn't find. And he was in such a rush, so he just took someone else's shoes and ran out. And then the spiritual master came and was looking all over for his shoes. And everyone was looking around. Where is his shoes? Where is his shoes? He had to go somewhere to catch an airplane, and there were no shoes. And finally someone saw this person and they were covered with mud and everything because he was doing something with cows. And they said, oh, you have Guru Maharaj's shoes. And then he felt very bad. So we should not take other... If something of ours is missing and we're in anxiety, it doesn't mean we should create a parampara of anxiety. And then you take somebody else's and cause them anxiety, and then they cause somebody else's and cause another anxiety. Better you go barefoot. Does that answer your question? Yes.
How to increase faith on guru sentences or senior
restaurants? If we follow the four regulative principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. If we're hearing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the teachings of the Lord, regularly in the association of devotees, and we're chanting the holy name sincerely, through this process, gradually faith awakens and develops within our heart. Faith is the natural condition of the soul, but in the conditioned state, that natural condition has been covered by materialistic attachments. The most important beginning for our spiritual life is faith. And factually, all of our advancement is dependent on the development of our faith. Faith is like when we come in contact with devotees, the seed of faith is planted in our heart. And at the beginning, that seed is very, very delicate. When a tree first starts growing, at the beginning, it's very thin and very small, and it can easily be stepped upon and killed. Or too much rain and it can drown. Or some animal can come and eat it. In the beginning stages, a tree is very, very subject to all sorts of destruction and danger. So our faith is like that. At the beginning, we come in contact with devotees, we hear the truth, the seed is planted, the faith begins to grow. We must protect it. And therefore, we need association of devotees. By associating with devotees and following the regulative principles, we're protecting our faith. And by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, we are watering the seed of that faith. And when we come to the point, adoshadatata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya, tato, when it comes to nishta, when the faith is strong, it becomes like a tree. Srila Prabhupada, he went alone to the whole Western world, but he had such nishta, such faith, that although he was living in the city of the most sin and pollution, the city that was influencing the whole world into maya and sense gratification, he converted thousands in the city to become Vaishnavas. That was the power of his faith. It was a tree that was so abundant with fruits that those fruits were dropping for everyone to enjoy. But at the beginning of stages, we must be very, very careful to water and make our faith grow by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees and protecting by following the principles of Krishna consciousness. And then naturally, this shraddha, this faith, becomes something so sublime, into something so pleasurable for the soul, ruchi, that we have no enthusiasm or inclination toward material life ever again. Yes.
Life is so beautiful and there are so many things in our life. So is it wrong to seek pleasure in things that doesn't concern Krishna, like various great books written by great authors and sports? Should we not seek pleasure in that?
you have to understand what is pleasure. Are you the body or are you the soul? What is the answer? You're the soul. So does sports give pleasure to your soul? Whether India or Pakistan wins the cricket match, do you think your soul could care less? In your previous life, you may have been a Pakistani. In this life, you're an Indian. In your next life, you may be born in Sri Lanka. So who do you think the soul wants to win the cricket match? The soul is aloof to all these material, temporary pleasures. The soul is looking for the ultimate pleasure of Krishna, love for Krishna, devotion to Krishna. So if we distract our attention away from the real pleasure that the soul is seeking by engaging our consciousness in trying to enjoy what the temporary mind and senses want, then we are cheating ourselves of the most valuable gift of this human form of life. It is not a question of good or bad. It is a question of the best utilization of our life. We should live for the needs and for the desires of our soul. Sports don't give anyone pleasure. Whether it's India, I was in India last year. We were giving a lecture in Borivali. And that happened to be the night that India was playing Pakistan in cricket. And somehow or other, there was about 3,000-4,000 people that came to the lecture. But it was 80% ladies. Because in India, ladies are more advanced than men. Because they are not attached to cricket matches. All the ladies said, our husbands are watching the cricket match on television. They wanted to come. They had everything arranged to come. But when they found out the cricket match, they said, I have to stay home. So in the middle of our lecture, India won. And all over Borivali, fireworks were going off to celebrate. And there were big parties and everyone was dancing around. We were dancing in a different way. Our dance was transcendental to whoever wins the cricket match. And then the next week, in Calcutta, they played Sri Lanka, and they lost. And what had? Nobody was shooting off fireworks. They were shooting off guns. They were throwing bottles at the players. The same players they were glorifying the week before, they were throwing bottles and rocks and eggs. Tomatoes. Krishnananda always likes to enhance the excitement of our lectures. And in this way, they were turning over cars and the whole country was in total distress. So that's the way sports is. You win, you lose. You win, you're happy. You lose, you're miserable. And nobody always wins. So do we want to utilize our life to put our precious energy in these pleasures? Or do we want to find the pleasure of the eternal relationship of God and the soul? Therefore, rather than reading these books that give us a little mental enjoyment, we read the scriptures which give eternal enjoyment to the soul. Rather than going to sporting events and reading the sport pages to see who wins, we come to the temple and we have our own wonderful athletics of chanting and dancing, reading the beautiful pastimes of Lord Chaitanya at Ratha Yatra, or Krishna's wrestling with his friends. This gives eternal satisfaction to the soul. So it is a question of what you want.
Is it wrong to seek purely in education?
Yes, no, it is not wrong to seek beauty. But we have to understand, what is beauty? Krishna is the name Krishna means eternally, unlimitedly beautiful. If we see Krishna in something, this microphone can be used either for speaking all material propaganda, or it can be used to glorify God. If we see the beauty of Krishna's energy and use it for Krishna's service, then that is true appreciation of beauty. Devotees want to see the beauty in everything, but we understand that beauty is Krishna. We want to see Krishna in everything, and how everything can be used for Krishna. Then we can actually understand what is real beauty and real pleasure.
Today, actually, he faced this spine problem. When he comes into Krishna consciousness, he knows very little philosophy. He goes to college, he wants to tell his friend, and friends, they just ignore him. They say he's mad. And at home also, he faces many opposition. He cannot practice four regulative principles. And he finds very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness. So how to maintain this determination?
Everyone is like that. Every one of these young men. Not a single one of them did their parents say, go join the Hare Krishna movement. Many of them now, their parents have joined the Hare Krishna movement. Because they took that bold step. Swarup Damodar Prabhu, he took that bold step. Now his mother, his brother, they're all devotees, initiated devotees. Raghupati took the bold step. His sisters are initiated devotees. We have devotees whose mothers, fathers, uncles, aunts, they're all, just because they took that bold step. So it is not that relatives and friends are evil, but they simply do not understand. They are just victims of the whole propaganda of the illusory energy within society. So out of compassion and love for them, we should become strong in our Krishna consciousness and be kind and compassionate to them, but not in any way compromise our spiritual principles. And by doing so, not only do we keep the goal of life alive within our hearts, and progress toward truth, but we will share the benefits of our spiritual development with our loved ones also, and gradually they will appreciate and become devotees. Definitely. Once they see they cannot change you, then they will try to understand you. As long as they think there's even one trace of a chance that they can change you to be like them, they will never try to really understand you with their hearts. They may try to understand with their minds just so they can argue with you. But when they give up all hope that our son cannot be changed, he is sold out to this path of bhakti, there's nothing we can do, we might as well try to understand what he's doing. Then they become devotees. Because it's the right thing to do. Yes.
It's highly frustrating for us when all our friends, relatives are dear ones whom we trust so much. They keep destroying our faith by telling, oh, you're doing something wrong. You should not do this. When we can't keep chanting regularly, we suddenly slowly lose faith in the entire process. We find chanting also so mechanical.
You should read the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. His father didn't agree with his bhakti either. But he was determined. And by his determination, his father was liberated. That is love. If Prahlad would have listened to his father and become an ordinary materialistic person, his father would have gone to hell with him. But the fact that he disobeyed his father and made him completely anxiety-ridden, was his mercy. His father became liberated by that process. So we must understand, as a human being, our only real goal and duty in life is self-realization and devotion to God. And no one, mother, father, sister, brother, even if a guru tries to tell you to not serve Krishna, he should be rejected. The story of Bali Maharaj. His guru, Shukracharya, told him, do not give everything to Vamanadev. Because he wants three steps of land, but if you offer him three steps of land, he will take everything. So do not give it. And Bali Maharaj said, the purpose of guru is to tell me how to surrender to Krishna, and you're telling me not to surrender to Krishna? I reject you. Get out. The purpose of a mother and father is to help us to fulfill the real meaning of human life. If they are not helping us, they will incriminate terrible sinful karma for keeping you from Krishna. If you want to be a devotee and they stop you, they're going to suffer hellish consequences for taking you away from God. Huh? If you love them, don't let them stop you. Whatever it takes, but become pure, follow Krishna consciousness, perfect your life, and they will get the credit. Even if they're against it, they will get all credit for giving birth to a child who has become self-realized, and they will be liberated. So if you love them, you have to understand what real love is. In this age of Kali Yuga, we see what society is. The very heritage of Indians' culture is devotion to God. But due to the Western influence of the British and of the Americans and of so many other empires that have come here, people are just chasing after the illusion. Get a good education, get good money, that's all that matters. Don't waste your time with this religion. For a person from India to say this? People come from all over the world to India to learn about religion? And then they come here and they see? To have a nice telephone, to have a nice house, to have a PhD, this is success in life. This is not success in life. This is illusion. So if our parents and our friends are an illusion, Prahlad Maharaj said, when the blind lead the blind, they all fall in the ditch. So why should we follow the blind and fall into the ditch? We should move toward the truth, toward Krishna, and we should help others in the same direction. And this is the test of whether you are worthy of Krishna, whether you are willing to stand firm and strong against all odds. I am coming from the West. What do you think my parents thought when I became a devotee of Krishna? They never heard of Krishna. Your parents heard of Krishna. They know what a sadhu is. My parents, they never heard the word sadhu. They were completely broken-hearted. Their minds were in millions of pieces. Their hearts were in millions of pieces when they saw me come home from India as a Vaishnava. And they tried to do everything through tears, through threats, through temptations. They tried to do everything to take me from the path. And all parents do the same thing. Sometimes they threaten suicide. If that doesn't work, they weep and they cry and they beat their head against the wall. And if that doesn't work, they yell at you and shout at you in anger and they try to take away your inheritance. And if that doesn't work, they try everything else. They try to get this person and that person and everyone else to convince you. And when nothing works, then they very humbly say, "What are you doing?" And then when they understand what you're doing, they say, "This is very good. I am so proud of you." Then they distribute your lecture tapes to their to all the other relatives, and give Prabhupada's books and start chanting japa. So do not worry, do not be disturbed by the temporary opposition that may come. It is quite natural. Yes.
There is a friend of mine, he calls himself to be a Protestant. So he says that in Bible it is said that they are not supposed to eat the food which is offered to the Lord. I gave him a masala packet, masala. He obviously refuses. Then I gave him a chivda, which I got it from the shop, accepted it. He says that we are not supposed to chant the Holy Name in the rosary. He says, mentioned in the Bible. He says that Jesus never preached the Ten Commandments. It was given in the Old Testament. Jesus came after that. I told him that many devotees of us, those are Christians from Western countries, have come to Krishna consciousness. So they say that they may be Catholics. So, did I answer him?
We can answer every one of those points on the basis of the Bible to defeat them. As far as the Ten Commandments, when Jesus came, he explained, he said, I have not come to do away with the laws of our forefathers, I have come to fulfill them. And he was speaking about the Ten Commandments. As far as food, bread, and grape juice. They call it wine, but actually it was grape juice. And they considered it holy because it was coming from his hands. And the Catholics, they perform a similar ritual, which is called the Eucharist, and they consider that one of the most sacred parts of their whole religion, is to take the prasad of the Lord. So what we should understand is that everyone has their own ideas and everyone can justify their materialistic way of life by whatever way they want. Essentially, these people are simply insincere. Jesus Christ himself said that It is the spirit and power of devotion that makes religion, not simply the rhetoric and the rituals. If a Vaishnav is in spirit surrendering his life to the supreme power of God, then a sincere Krishna will recognize that. Whether he's a Protestant or a Catholic, and he'll think this is good. But if on the basis of all of these concocted arguments, they reject that spirit of devotion and purity, then that is their unfortunate condition. The fact is that most devotees in the West came from Protestant families. And why did they come? Because most of them were so frustrated by the hypocrisy of the nonsense that people talk, like these people you're talking to, that they rejected their own religion because of that. These people who preach like this are actually the worst enemies to their own religion. Because sane, intelligent, open-minded people who really want to love God reject religions because of fanatics like this. And they're searching for something real, something true, something pure. And many of them found that in Srila Prabhupada's teachings and surrendered their lives. Within this movement, there are people from Protestant backgrounds, Catholic backgrounds, Jewish backgrounds, Muslim backgrounds, Hindu backgrounds, people who really wanted to understand the essence of religion and dedicate themselves with love to the Supreme Lord. Those are the types of people that come to Krishna consciousness. So it is no use arguing with someone who doesn't want to hear. If someone thinks they know, just what is the use? You can defeat them 100,000 ways and they still won't hear you. To be humble means to understand that I cannot do anything or think anything or speak anything without the mercy of Krishna, which is coming down through the great Acharya's blessings. That whatever I do, the credit goes to those who have blessed me to do it. A postman is not proud of giving you a letter. A postman simply understands I am just delivering. Whether we are a good cook, or a good preacher, or a good manager, or a good student, or good at anything in our life, we should understand that it is the power of God that makes it good. It is not me. I am just the instrument, the humble instrument, and we should give all credit to the Lord, and all credit to His devotees. In that way, we can always remain humble. Yes? In terms of Krishna consciousness, by taking shelter of Krishna, we become fearless. Bhajahure mana srinandanandana abhaya charanadavindare. By keeping our mind at the shelter of the feet of Krishna, we become fearless. Why? Because Krishna is the ultimate protector. Krishna has promised, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. He will always protect his devotee. If you have that faith, you become fearless. Real spiritual fearlessness comes to the extent we are taking shelter of Krishna with humility and devotion. To be a coward is to succumb to situations like this gentleman has been explaining. When social pressures are trying to take us away from Krishna consciousness, to compromise our devotional service because of those pressures, that is a coward. We should not be cowards. We should know that if I surrender to Krishna, everything will be achieved. And everyone around me will benefit infinitely, whether they know it or not. And whatever assaults they put on us, tolerance means we go on with our service despite what comes upon us. Whether it's too much heat or too much cold or too much criticism from others, we will go on with our service without deviation. That is tolerance. And if someone abuses us or misuses us, we go on with our service and we tolerate it. But if someone tries to take us away from the path of bhakti and we leave it, that is called coward. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Why do we procreate? Almost every living organism has an instinct to procreate. Even creates animals and humans. Almost every man here thinks of his future in terms of having a family, having children. So why is it so fundamental, so instinctive for everyone to procreate life?
Pungshastriya maithuni bhavametam tayormito hrideya granti mahu. The Lord has explained the basic principle of the whole material existence is the attraction between male and female. This attraction is what keeps us within this material world. Maituna agara. This material world is called in the shastras the shackles of sex desire. It is that sex desire, that pleasure of sex, which gives us the experience that we are God. Because ultimately, God is the creator. And to enjoy the experience of creation means to want to enjoy the position of God. That's why we come to this world. And the way out of the world is to give up this idea and this desire to be God and to become the servant. Therefore, in any civilized society and throughout the whole Varnashram system created with the Vedas, this sex impulse is either given up or regulated. Where there is unrestricted sex, there is an unrestricted kindling of the flame of the burning desire to enjoy. And in a subtle way, to enjoy the position of the creator or of God. So therefore, in the Grihastha ashram, most people will take to the Grihastha ashram, because to simply give up sex is very, very difficult, because that tendency is so strongly embedded within our heart due to so many previous births of seeking that pleasure and cultivating the desire for that pleasure. So the Grihastha ashram is to regulate that impulse, that passion. Grihamedi means no regulation. Grihamedi means you go down. Grihastha means you make advancement. So through regulating that impulse, we make spiritual advancement. And if one somehow has the power and the determination to give it up, then that is a very fast and expedient road to spiritual purification. But if we are not able to do that honestly, it's better to be an honest Grihastha. And we can go back to Godhead either way. But ultimately, in order to give it up, we have to experience a higher taste. Even in order to regulate it, we have to experience a higher pleasure. And that's why we must regularly chant the holy names. We must come and chant and dance and take prasad. These are higher spiritual experiences which give pleasure to our mind, our senses, as well as our soul. And by being fully active and engaged in these higher activities of devotional service, we actually have the strength and the power to tolerate the lower urges of our body. That is the process. The body is not vital for the soul. The soul really wants nothing to do with these bodies. Due to illusion, the soul thinks it is this body. So therefore, but as long as we're in this body, the nature for pleasure is there. So we give the body what it needs, but we use the body for the purpose of purifying our existence rather than degrading our existence. There's pleasure in Krishna consciousness. Do you not like prasad? Do you not like kirtan? Your body also? No, you strike a balance by following the direction of Krishna, not by following the direction of your mind. If you try to figure things out with your mind, you will end up in illusion. The mind is your worst enemy. You strike a balance by hearing from Krishna. Arjuna was confused. He heard from Krishna, and there was no more confusion. Do you understand? Very well. Yes. It's someone who hasn't asked you.
Some devotees have the desire, has the urge to take the bold step, but the urge due to time, it varies percentage. Sometimes his urge is in a very high percentage, sometimes very low, according to time. So how does he know whether the urge he is having to take the bold step? Is it the proper urge or is it the intermediate, immature urge to take the decision for the bold step?
We should know that Krishna consciousness is a gradual development. It is not that you have to be a pure devotee before you take to the path. You may have so many desires and so many inclinations to so many forms of material life. But gradually, by practicing Krishna consciousness, we become free from those. At the beginning, as far as this bold step, there are different ways of becoming Krishna conscious. If you actually want to follow the process properly, you have to be bold. Whether you want that to gradually come in time or whether you want to do it now, that is a question that you can... But it is very dangerous to try to do it over a period of time. Because the more we compromise, the more we realize that Maya doesn't get more lenient. The more she sees you compromise, the more she'll become intolerant of your Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we think, let me just compromise now and later, then I will become more serious. But Maya is trying to take you away now, and when she sees, oh, he's compromising, she just has stronger grip, stronger and stronger grip. So we simply have to be convinced that this is the best thing for me, the best thing for all others concerned. This is the path of truth. And we should follow it wholeheartedly. And we should be bold. But in order to get that strength, that may take some time. It's not that the first day we come, we have that strength. But we go on hearing, we go on chanting, we go on associating with devotees, and in due course of time, when we have that strength, then we should actually dedicate ourselves.
Before coming to Krishna consciousness, we might be having a lot of unfulfilled desires since time immemorial. After coming to Krishna consciousness, our desires are totally changed. So, because we are having unfulfilled desires, will Krishna fulfill that? Or because we are having a spiritual desire now, will we fulfill the spiritual desire? So, what will be...
He will fulfill the desire that you hold on to. If you hold on to your material desires, he will fulfill those. And then he will frustrate it, just to teach you it's the wrong thing. If you hold on to your spiritual desires, he will certainly fulfill that and give you himself. Should we end now or continue? Would you... Yes? Intelligence means the word of God. What Krishna speaks in Gita is our intelligence. Intelligence doesn't mean just something filtering through your mind. Intelligence is the word of God. And when we remember the word of God, that is our intelligence. And when we act according to that dictation, that is intelligence. Can you turn this fan on? Okay. Last question. Yes?
Science is in its own way revealing the beauty of the creation of God. Then is the cause of science misdirected?
Is the cause of science misdirected? The highest science is the science of consciousness, the science of who I am and what is my relationship with the Supreme. The science which teaches us how to become free from all miseries and to become free from death. That is the ultimate science. That science is most clearly and elaborately delineated in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and such Vedic literatures. This materialistic sciences of the West have their limits in what can be perceived by the mind and senses. In fact, just recently we were in Calcutta where there was a conference of the synthesis of science and religion. And the biggest Nobel Prize laureates, PhDs, and the top scientists in the world, they have so many big words, and they understand so many theoretical conceptions of science. But if they cannot compartmentalize something by sensual experience, it completely short-circuits their whole consciousness. Unless something can be compartmentalized, departmentalized, and categorized according to what we can perceive with our mind and senses, it can't be considered as real. And even though they know, obviously, there is something more real, they can't conceive of it because they're so addicted to this conceptualization of departmentalizing things according to our sensual and mental experiences. But the fact is, every one of them know that there are so many truths beyond our physical and mental experiences, or even our power to experience. So material science has its limitations. Therefore, spiritual science is the highest and truest science. And the material sciences all began, essentially, with spiritual people. All the universities in the Western world, the founding universities, they were all started by monks and Christian churches. Every one of them. The idea was, from the point of view of religion, they were trying to develop deeper and deeper understandings of the universe to glorify God. The more you know about what God has done, the more you can glorify Him. Science began as a religious act, even material science. But then man became so proud and so degraded that he's thinking, now we have so much knowledge of the universe, we don't need God. We kick out God. It's unscientific to talk about God because we cannot compartmentalize Him according to our sensual experiences or any of His energies. But what are they doing for the world? Srila Prabhupada says, the science of Gita teaches us how to solve the problem of death. And these scientists, they are creating bombs just to accelerate the process of death. So science is not bad. But science must be, in order for it to truly benefit the world, it must be utilized by the consciousness of a person who has God consciousness. That was the original intention, and that is the only way science will do good. Otherwise, it is all just an investigation of Maya and illusion.
Can material science never, by advancement, reveal spiritual knowledge?
Hmm?
Can material science, by advancement, never reveal spiritual knowledge?
The conclusion of material science is Einstein. After a lifetime of study, he realizes, I don't know. There must be a God, and I should surrender to Him. To that extent, material science can reveal God. Otherwise, God's revealing Himself everywhere, but they're not willing to accept. Everything they're looking at is a revelation of God, but they're not willing to accept it. when they become completely frustrated by all their attempts to understand, then they throw their hands up and say, Krishna, save me. Otherwise, it is all useless. It is keeping people in ignorance. But Prabhupada said, if you have a thorn in your side, you can take another thorn to take the first thorn out. So scientists have created such a mess of atheism throughout the world. It's a fact. Even these biggest scientists were all saying that originally the world was basically believing in God, and then religious people turned to understanding deeper and deeper material sciences, and then they gave up God. And then after understanding all these theories of relativity, quantum mechanics, and all these other things, they, from Galileo on, they started rejecting God. And in the name of science and modern education, they turned people away from God. Now most of the world is essentially atheistic as far as science. When you're a little child in the Western schools, they teach you Darwin's theory of evolution, in which there's no place for a God to exist. So that is modern science. But Prabhupada said you can take the same modern science and take out that thorn if it's used by God-conscious people. If you're just willing to recognize and see God in all of your experimentation and all your hypothesis, then your science becomes for the ultimate benefit of humanity. Do you understand? If it's channelized for devotion to God, with a conception of God, it is no longer material, it is spiritual. The difference between material and spiritual is whether either you forget Krishna or remember Krishna. If you can spiritualize material science by Krishna consciousness, then it is good. The path to light is good, the path to darkness is bad. So yes, material science can do great wonders for the whole world if it is spiritualized. And it will create